Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the sheriff of Jefferson Parish, Sheriff Joe Lapinto. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Joe, you know, just kind of reminiscing, I was looking at the date, and today was actually Harry Lee's birthday. He would have been 93 years old today. He was born August 27th, 1932. So he would have been 93 today. Just a little... tidbit of information.
Happy birthday, Harry. We miss him for sure.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Joe, really excited about this topic. I had an opportunity to speak with you the other day. You told me a little bit about what was going on with your deployment of first responder drones that you hope will take place in September. Tell us about this technology and explain to us how it will be deployed.
No, I can't wait. This started probably 5 years ago. Chula Vista, California was utilizing a drone as a first responder. Now, Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office has used drones for years, probably have 30 in our arsenal. Drones outside Jones, it doesn't make a difference, but they're always line of sight drones where a person, you know, launches the drone from their location, always has line of sight of that drone itself and is able to operate it. In Chula Vista, California, FAA regulations also required them to have line of sight. Well, that was okay for them because Chula Vista, California averages, you know, 62 degrees, 65 degrees a year, and you had someone on top of a roof and they launched a drone. That certainly isn't going to work in South Louisiana. I can't put somebody on a roof to be able to make that happen. But as the technology advanced, we have the ability from an FAA standpoint, they give you waivers in order to operate drones without a line of sight. So it gives us the opportunity to put 23 drones that will cover the vast majority of the unincorporated areas of Jefferson Parish, including most of the cities in Jefferson Parish also. And we will have them pre-positioned in cooled, heated charging stations on the top of a roof somewhere. And they have a 2 mile radius. So we overlap those drones from different locations of where it is. So we were able to cover the vast majority of the parish. And then we have one room that has the ability to have four drone pilots in. So we're listening to radio calls. And so when a radio call comes out, they have the ability to interact with that call. The call goes into the computer-aided dispatch system. So it already knows the GPS location. And they say launch. And that launch will launch DFR number 3. Drone is the first responder number 3 would launch and fly autonomously. It knows that we have geofenced all the buildings and power lines and all towers and all that take care of it. But it flies to the location autonomously without the pilot intervention. And then once it gets on scene, the pilot then basically takes over the camera and puts the camera on what it wants to look at. It has been shown in other jurisdictions that have started to implement this that probably 25% of the calls to service of our road deputies can be marked up by a first responder drone. It also, you know, certainly gives the information to us a lot sooner. And I give the example of the door handle pullers that we know about. You know, door handle puller is out at 2 o'clock in the morning in the 100 block of A Street. Well, by the time my policeman gets there, 3 to 5 minutes later, they're not in the 100 block of A Street. I don't know if they're on B Street. I don't know if they're on C Street. I don't know if they got in the car, or I don't know if they're in the 400 block of A Street. But we've got to go locate them. So if a vehicle turns down that street, the burglar just jumps into an alleyway, hides until you drive past, and then they get to keep on going or get out of the area. Well, with this, we put a drone up in the air, all have thermal capabilities. They get to fly above that scene, locate the person before we even put a unit in the area, make a determination when's the best time to go in. When they get into another car, you know what? Now we're going to go take them down. We're going to go surround that car, and the person's not going to know what hit them. And so it gives us a very, very quick response time, but with live eyes on the ground immediately, you know, within a minute or two of launching a drone. Very excited about this.
Now, Joe, Sheriff, you know that you're going to have successes with this because you guys have deployed line of sight already, you know, in certain neighborhoods when certain things are happening, and you've been able to track individuals, door pullers or whatever it may be, and take them down as well, right?
Well, it gives us also, I give a perfect example, obviously, with a bad outcome with the New Orleans East missing child that was found yesterday, right? We had a very similar situation a week prior. It was a five-year-old autistic, nonverbal autistic female that wandered out of the house, ended up, we got on scene very quickly. I certainly sent our drone teams to that location, but it was still 25 minutes before my first drone team was on the ground to start launching. The child ended up being in a house next door playing with a dog and was safe and had no clue that, you know, 100 people were looking for. But at the end of the day, if we had that drone as a first responder operational, from the moment we get the phone call, that drone is over that neighborhood within a minute. And so we're able to start checking the backyards that have pools in them. We're all, you know, and so because all of that is manpower. You know, even though you get 20 people on scene, you got to, okay, how do I jump this fence? How do I get around? How do I get in this neighborhood? Who has pools? Who doesn't have pools? We're pulling up Google Maps, right? You know, the drone gets to be able to search those large areas very, very quickly and gives us the opportunity to you know, check those off the list, you know, before a hand-to-hand search goes, right? You know, so having that success, we have seen it, but it's always a delay when our SWAT team gets put there, or just a drone team or a search and rescue team or whatever the case may be. And this will be, give that immediate action to be able to be there. And you think of it this way. This is 23 drones that work 24 hours a day. For me to cover a shift, that's four shifts. It's an A shift, a B shift, a night watch, and a day watch for a 12-hour shift. So this is, you know, basically four sets of eyes that are out there on patrol every single day. For us, it's 23, so that's, what, 88? 88 sets of eyes for the price of about 10.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is absolutely incredible technology. Now, these are camera view style drones only, right? Because I know some of the newer technology, they even have armaments on the drones.
Yeah, they won't have armaments, although we will have lights on them. We do have the ability to talk on them. We're actually going to have, for some reason, it loses connection and can't fly it back. It actually has a parachute on it, so we can go get it from that standpoint, although that doesn't happen often. But it also has the capabilities to hook, you know, whether it's defibrillators to it to bring them to remote operations, or even a life jacket. So we'll have a life jacket type of drone out at Bonneville Boat Launch. So anybody within 2 miles of Bonneville Boat Launch, if a boat goes down, I can get a life jacket out to a location very quickly too.
So I know the hope is this will be deployed in the month of September. Is that correct?
They're going to be delivered starting in the month of September. I already have some of my buildings already ready for. We're working on the control center now. I hope to have all 23 by the end of the year, if not sooner. We will have them in stock, but we're, you know, working with private businesses and contractors to, you know, get all the infrastructure in place that we need to put on each location. But the vast majority of them will be finished before Thanksgiving.
Joe, let's pivot real quick, and congratulations on the deployment and best of luck on the deployment of that equipment. You know, I'm a tech guy, right? I'm sitting here and I'm a little jealous, Joe. I'm going to be honest with you.
I think we all are. I mean, look, let's face it, the days that you grew up in, you know, you certainly before me, but even for me, I wish we had this when we were coming up through. I mean, it's really fun to watch. I'm glad I'm being a part of it.
Absolutely. Let's pivot. You know, you'll be sheriff now 8 years in September, and you've already had to face in command of storm response, and we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of Katrina. A lot of chatter, a lot of talk. Just your general observations of preparation, coordination, collaboration.
Well, I think, look, I am I'm one of those ones that I was on the 9, but I graduated law school in December of 2004. So I left the sheriff's office, 8 months right before Katrina, and I wasn't on the job at that period of time, right? But certainly the challenges that you and Harry went through, you've made it easier for me in the future, right? And whether it's the international trucks that we have where many departments relied off of Humvees that didn't work or anything like that, and now we've been able to not only utilize your international trucks but replace them with a different. So we have working equipment that goes out to do it. That doesn't solve the day. We can't evacuate 400,000 people from a government perspective. But I think, you know, the older population that was around during Katrina understands the value of, let me get out of here for this. So our communication system is so much better today, right, than it was back then. So hopefully, you know, if we ever have another Katrina, we still have communications, because that was the biggest issue that you had during that storm. You know, nobody knew what another person was doing unless you were able to just get in touch with them by, you know, mouth to mouth and say, okay, go do this. And then you didn't see them for several hours before they came back and said, okay, that's done, and you do something else. And so the communication is such a big effort during those times of need. And when you don't have it, it just makes it impossible.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, we worked hard in the aftermath of that to have the latest and greatest technology. It continues to improve, and it's a lot better today than it ever was, and to have a level of redundancy. I have often said, Joe, and I want your reaction to this, if you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, one of my comments is I only can control what I control, right? I mean, because the fact of it is I don't know when the next homicide's going to happen, but when it happens, I know I can control the response to it, right? And so I agree with you. You can expect somebody else to do it, but don't necessarily expect the outcome that you are looking for or as quick as you want it. And so you've got to have people that are, you know, responded to that, understand that that's the mentality that has to go into any type of operation. This is what we need, and this is what we need to do now. And if you can, you know, understand that that's what it is and have that clear chain of command of this is what the decision is, let's do it and let's implement it, and then we can move on to the next decision. But do it and do it now.
Yeah. Let's finish up real quick. You have your 6-month, you know, crime stats. Where do we find ourselves? And if you don't have it, I do. Looking
crazy.
At 29% reduction in murders through the first 6 months, 22% reduction in rape, 34% reduction in robberies, 4% reduction in assault, 1% reduction in burglaries, 19% reduction in thefts, and 33% reduction in auto thefts. 3,429 reported UCR Part 1 crime offenses. If that holds true in the back half, this will be, I tease you all the time, I always dreamed of getting below 10,000. I never did get there. But this will be in the, this could potentially be in the 77,000 to 7,500 range, which is unheard of.
It really is. I don't know how low it can go, Noel. I mean, last year was our lowest year ever, and we are well below those numbers this year. It really is. It's unreal. I mean, I credit our community. I credit the technology. You know, burglaries that you couldn't solve back in the day, it's because we didn't have the information that we have today. Everybody's got a Ring camera. Everybody's got a camera on the house. So if your house is burglarized, we're going to have a picture of somebody leaving that area. Even if you don't have it in your house, somebody is, right? And so the ability for us to solve crime is so much easier. The amount of things on people's cell phones, you know, gives us the ability to go to solve these homicides and have nearly 100% solve rate on them. And so nobody's getting a second homicide or a third homicide. You know, the fact of it is we're solving it after the first and we don't hear about it again, right? And so it really has drove down those numbers to an unheard of level. And, you know, look, we had a murder of a 3-year-old yesterday or 2 days ago, right? I mean, it's unreal. I can't fathom it. But that being said, the numbers themselves, when you just put the number to it, to be lower than we are, we've only had 3 years since going back to 74 that we were in the teens. Both of the other ones were in the 80s. this one was last year was 19, and we're lower this year than we were last year. You know, look, I'm happy for it, and I'm glad I'm part of it.
No, absolutely. That's when I was looking at the numbers, I was like, oh wow. And you know, one of the most impressive numbers, quite frankly, is the reduction in thefts, because that's a hard crime category to deal with, and it's a crime category that, as you well know, is the largest percentage of the reported crimes to the FBI.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to do a good job on that to keep that down, right? As you know, that was one that always continues to increase and increase and increase. And one of the ones that we do from that standpoint is we have a very robust ability to really prosecute shoplifters. And these drones are going to help that, too. So now when I have a company that calls and says I have two shoplifters in the building, instead of a unit trying to get there on time before they get there, a drone will be on the scene. Yep, they just walked out the door. Okay, they're getting into this car. This is the license plate off the car. Even if I don't have a policeman on scene, I have information that I get to follow up on. And so we work very well with the DA's office to prosecute shoplifters in Jefferson Parish, and it keeps them out of the parish. It certainly, is a large majority of the UCR crimes that exist. But if you can keep that number manageable, you can continue to drive down the number.
Yeah, especially when you see these horror story videos in jurisdictions around the country where they're just bum-rushing these retail outlets, you know, 10, 12, 15 kids going in and just stealing everything they can get their hands on.
Well, we had an investigation into a cigarette, distribution center where it was people from California. They literally were coming across country. They broke in and ended up, getting, I don't remember how many cases and cases and cartons of cigarettes. But sure enough, they find out about it the next morning. They contact us. We start looking at cameras. We end up getting them and start tracking the vehicle already in Texas, I want to say like Amarillo. We get in touch with Texas state troopers, and they end up making a stop. We recovered all the cigarettes, made four arrests, and all from California. I mean, but within 8 hours of the burglary happening, they were 8 hours away by vehicle, and we stopped them in Texas and recovered everything. It was great.
Those were some of the best days that I ever spent at the JPSO, and I'm sure they're the same for you. When you read that daily report and your men and women are connecting all the dots and making it happen on a day-by-day basis, I used to love those days. I love starting my day reading that daily.
Fun to open an email. That's great.
So. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Sheriff Joe LoPinto, the sheriff of Jefferson Parish. Congratulations, and keep up the huge success in crime fighting on the streets of our parish. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sheriff.
We'll be right back, folks. That was Sheriff Joe LoPinto of Jefferson Parish. Stay with us, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we'll visit with the president and CEO of Entergy Louisiana, Philip May. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We've heard a lot about Meta's $10 billion data center that's being developed in Richland Parish. And just yesterday, we heard during the cabinet meeting, President Trump talking about the massive size of this facility, almost as big as Manhattan itself. And we also know that it's going to require a lot of power. Well, joining us is Philip May, president and CEO of Entergy Louisiana. The Public Service Commission has approved Entergy's plan to build new infrastructure to power the Meta facility, and he's here to talk to us about it. Philip, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is obviously a huge economic win for the state of Louisiana on so many different fronts. And I know that you guys are very excited about working with them in order to make sure that they have the necessary power to get this project done.
Yeah, absolutely. We met with Meta beginning in January of last year, and it came clear that they wanted to be a real partner in how we work to get power that they need and so forth. And what's so exciting about this project is bringing significant investment to a part of the state that really hasn't seen it. We've seen a lot of industrial development in the south end of the state, but not so much in the north end. So Meta's placing a massive investment in the northern part of the state, and they're doing it in a way where they're paying the full cost of all the interconnection necessary to serve them. They're paying for the generation. So the net of this is having Meta will actually have our bills lower than they otherwise would have because of the way we structured that contract, because Meta was truly interested in being a true partner with the state of Louisiana.
That's huge, Philip, right? I mean, that's not a happenstance or an occurrence that happens all the time.
It's never happened in my 40 years that I've worked in this industry. So it's highly unusual, and we're super excited to have them here.
So obviously you have a lot of regulatory hurdles to jump over. It seems as though y'all got through that process. The Public Service Commission approved the plan put forward by your organization, Entergy Louisiana. What will that look like?
Yeah, so what that did is we presented a plan, and then, of course, the Public Service Commission, along with other interveners, took a look at that, and they asked us to make some tweaks and do some additional things in there, which we have done, all which makes the deal that we cut with Meta even better for the state of Louisiana. But, you know, essentially what we're going to do, we're going to build three power plants. Two power plants are going to be right there on the site adjacent to Meta. We're going to build another power plant here in South Louisiana, actually in St. Charles Parish, all of which will produce investment for the state of Louisiana, jobs for the state of Louisiana, and then the investment that Meta itself makes, which they pegged at $10 billion, is going to come with 5,000 construction jobs and 500 permanent jobs. Those 500 permanent jobs are going to have a multiplier effect that will, again, produce essentially 2,500 new jobs in the Richland Parish area. So that investment by Meta, the investment that we will make, will all produce economic benefits, expand our grid, make our grid more resilient, more robust, all of which creates benefits for our citizens of Louisiana.
We're speaking with Philip May, President and CEO of Entergy Louisiana. Up there, too, a part of the infrastructure that's going to, I guess, be improved is your transmission corridors, right, as it relates to these new power plants?
That's correct. So we are building a large number of lines, and for the lines that are directly connecting to Meta, there's more than $1 billion of which they're paying for up front. So we'll get the additional benefit of those transmission lines, and they'll be paying for those directly up front. So our customers won't pay for those. We are building and expanding another line that we were planning to have to expand in 2033. We're bringing that forward to 2030. And so the way that will work, that will be shared with customers, but the upfront cost of paying for that will be paid for by Meta. So the net effect of that is customers will be no worse off. They were going to be paying for it at 2033. Meta will pay for a big chunk of that upfront, so the customers are no worse off, and yet stronger, better, more resilient grid as a result of these investments.
Got a number of texts, Philip, asking what kind of plants are these that will be generating power for Meta?
Yeah, it's a great question, and when we were working with Meta how we need to do this, it became clear to us the only way to meet their desire to do this quickly was to do this with natural gas plants. So we're building three combined cycle combustion turbines. These will be the most efficient plants on our system. In fact, they'll produce another $100 million a year in fuel benefits for all customers as a result of that efficiency. But Meta also has a commitment to having a clean resources. So they're also going to have 1,500 megawatts of solar available to them to help decarbonize that facility. We are also going to add carbon capture sequestration to one of our plants to reduce the carbon impact of this facility. So it really demonstrates what we can do on a fast scale. It's a tribute to Louisiana working together, but also the additional benefits of cleaning up that energy so Meta can meet its commitments of having clean energy for that facility.
timing is everything. Time kills all deals. If you're not able to do this and respond in this fashion, they go somewhere else, right?
They absolutely go somewhere else. And as I said, we started meeting with these folks in January 2024. What we learned during the announcement was this was essentially a competition on a world scale. They could build this anywhere. They chose to build their marquee investment here in Louisiana because we're able to respond with speed. And I will tell you, never been more proud of our state, because when we first brought this to the governor and secretary of LED, Susan Bourgeois, it took a all of Louisiana approach to get this done. Local officials, the legislature, the governor and his cabinets, all connecting so we can make this happen quickly. And then the LPSC actually advanced the approval of this to August from October, which is important because Meta is actually, as you mentioned in the cabinet meeting that Trump had this week, he talked about the potential for Meta to expand this project to make it even more of a dramatic investment and larger impacts, larger benefits for our state and our customers.
So let's I know when y'all implement a lot of these changes like this, you look at the infrastructure grid in a way that it helps in more ways than one, right? Were y'all able to take that same approach this time?
We did, and it's able to bring stronger, more resilient lines into the state. It allows us to have higher load serving capability. In other words, the next customer that shows up will get the benefit of that. But in addition, because Meta will be paying for a significant share of existing things we planned for, as you know, we're in the middle of a $2 billion resilience program. Meta joining us essentially means more people will be paying that bill. So it will reduce the cost that customers have to pay for resilience, for instance, by 10%. Same thing for prior storms. We generally bring those folks in and then have to pay for it over a period afterwards. Meta will pay for a portion of that, reducing the cost for our other customers by 10%. So you're absolutely right. It improves our infrastructure, but even better, it allows us to do it at lower cost to our customers.
What I like about it, and the reason I asked the question, is I love when y'all have options, right? Because, you know, as one of my previous interviews today, I said that Mother Nature is predictably unpredictable. And the more options you have, the more tools in your toolbox, so to speak, that you can shift things around and provide power from different directions. And that's nothing but good for us down here. We know that because we were embedded in serious conversations when we lost some of our transmission corridors.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point, because when we talk to Meta about what we needed to do in placement up north, one of the things we were able to do is look at where our grid had vulnerabilities before, where we needed to improve that, and how we can make it more robust. And one of the things that will come with this is additional transmission lines that create redundancy for South Louisiana. You know, our grid essentially runs close to along the I-10 corridor with not a whole lot of northern input coming into that. So when you have a storm, if it chops into one of those corridors, it puts the grid at risk. By being able to inject more power from the north, which is something we're going to benefit from with Meta, that will allow us to have a more resilient grid when we do have those storms that show up. Because so far this hurricane season has been good for us, but we know that there's going to be another storm one day, and we're thinking about how we make this grid better for our customers.
Philip, I want to hear you knock on some wood right now, okay? This season's not over.
Haven't quite got to the peak yet, but I'll take it.
And, you know, and then the opportunity gain as well, as you talked about earlier, with the possibility of expansion, because the expansion probably is going to increase the need for more power, right? And more options being developed.
Absolutely. It will require a dramatic increase in power. I think Meta has described this as roughly 2 gigawatts, and what they are putting on the table is something close to 5 gigawatts. So more than doubling the size of that creates optionality for us to expand the grids in new ways that can create even more benefits for our customers. But, you know, the other thing that goes with that is those new plants will create more redundancy, more resiliency, and more efficiency for our existing customers. And lastly, the thing I want to say about this is that having the state be able to move quickly on this is why we, Louisiana, are in contention for one of the largest, most advanced data centers in the entire world. And it says something about what we can do as a state when we are aligned about the outcomes we're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. This is a win-win on all fronts. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts are, look, this is not going to be a lot of work over the next 3 years, but customers should know the result of this will be lower bills than they otherwise would be, stronger infrastructure, more efficient power plants, and more reliability, all things that work to the benefit of our state and our customers.
Absolutely a win-win again, and we really appreciate you joining us. Philip May, President and CEO of Entergy Louisiana. Have a great Labor Day weekend, sir, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that was Philip May, President and CEO of Entergy Louisiana. This is exciting. I mean, it's one of the biggest projects in the history of the state of Louisiana. And then as he just laid out, Philip May, that is, it makes perfect sense. It creates so many downstream options and upside for us. It's huge. As they negotiated and were thinking through this process, now it's been approved by the Louisiana Public Service Commission, and things will be moving fast. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, the Katrina story is your story, our story, and the New Orleans story. Friday, on the anniversary of the storm, you can join WWL for a special day-long broadcast featuring Tommy Tucker, myself, Dave Cohen, Scoot, live from the Presbyterian in historic Jackson Square from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. You're going to hear interviews you haven't heard before about the rescue, the recovery, the rebirth of one of America's most beloved cities, brought to you by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and the Louisiana State Museums. And you're not going to want to miss an amazing free symposium, Living with Hurricanes Katrina and Beyond, reimagined for the next generation, from 10 a.m. to noon. It'll be one block away, right there at the La Petite Theater. It is moderated by Norman Robinson and features the Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, Walter Isaacson, Aaron Broussard, and former Mayor of Lafitte Tim Kerner. Then tour the updated exhibition at the Presbyter from noon to four, free and open to the public on Friday, August 29th. And talking about the exhibit, let's go to Kathy, who has something to talk about. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Hi. I am so proud of my dad. He's Pete Savoy. Everybody knows him. And he had a lifelong fight to close Mr. Go. He believed that the salt water would intrude into the marsh, killing all of the cypress trees, which was our barrier. He went around to all the schools and anything that he could talk, any group that he could talk to, with his display, which is now in the Presbyter. My dad passed away 11 years ago. He got very sick after Katrina. Before he got sick, well, he was on his way being sick, but Carlton Dubichoux brought him in a boat, and he threw the first stone into Mr. Goat to close it. And I'm very proud of him.
Will you be there Friday, Kathy?
I didn't know about this, and I do. I would have to know a time because I could move my clients around. Yeah, I would love to be there.
Well, the exhibit opens Friday, and it's open to the public. It's free. There's a symposium from 10 to 12 that's going to be put on at the Little Theater right across the street from the Presbyter. So come on out, and you'll have the first day opportunity to see the exhibit.
And maybe my brother as well, Steve Savoy, because he lived it with my dad as well. We were all from Chalmette at the time, yeah. So, yeah, everybody knows my dad, Pete Savoy. But his exhibit is there, and I will try and come, and I'll get my brother to come.
Well, congratulations to you and your family, and obviously your dad is in everybody's thoughts. I recall he worked hard. He was serious about it. So, Kathy, thank you for joining us. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. All right, folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we're going to visit with Greg Rusevich. During Katrina, Greg was the CEO of Transoceanic Shipping. We'll talk about the trials and tribulations of Katrina and